That's Bronx-born percussionist Bobby Matos and his Afro-Latin Jazz All-Stars with Philadelphia Mambo. It's from his 2004 album, Made by Hand. And of course, that's his reference to his skills and conga and other percussion instruments. This is Lead Stories. I'm Yatrice Lead, and hell continues to break loose in Washington. We have the entire senior staff of the State Department submitting their resignations today. They're done. They do not wish to be part of the Trump administration, so they're gone. And that leaves, of course, in addition to filling the spot of the Secretary of State, now the Trump administration has to fill all those slots that have become empty as of today. We have the, let me see what else is going on. The doomsday clock has been set to now 2.5 minutes to midnight. Now, what is all that about? The doomsday clock is the scientist's way of measuring how much time it would take to blow up the whole world. And they have now put it at 2.5 minutes before the entire world can be destroyed. This was done as of midnight last night. This was the determination of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, and that's what they call themselves. These are people who calculate, in part, what it would take, how much time it would take for the entire world to blow up if some nut should press a button. It is now, they call it 2.5 minutes to midnight. Donald Trump is, of course, at it again, and he continues to roil the minds of many. He has decided that he may cancel a meeting with the Mexican president, who was to be here to discuss this wall that he has okayed. He has given the green light to the wall, but it's still questionable whether, in fact, it is still going to be built. But ahead of the meeting, and Mexicans themselves were under pressure to cancel it by Mexican nationals. They did not want any meeting between their president, President Nieto, and the president we now have. It's hard to wrap my brain still around that. But Trump has already done a number of things, barely finishing his first week. He has set about the task of making real his campaign promises. He's already taken executive actions that begin the dismantling of Obamacare, that withdraw the United States from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that freeze all federal regulations pending review, but that speed up those for manufacturing applications, that fast-track the Keystone and Dakota Access oil pipelines, and further requiring that all pipeline material, including for repair, should be U.S. manufactured, that beef up and accelerate the U.S.'s deportation program, including blocking grants to sanctuary cities that are seen as unwilling to enforce immigration laws, and that this wall that he's about to build with Mexico, he has authorized that the wall should be built, but it needs to go through a few steps, considering that the Republicans are saying at the minimum it will cost $15 billion, and other estimates put it as high as $25 billion. And he, of course, is going to be shoring up Border Patrol agents by at least 5,000. Trump's swift moves, so far requiring no congressional debate, have roiled the Democrats in opposition and even some of the Republican establishment. But he's using a tactic often used by his predecessor, President Barack Obama, to undo many of Obama's signature policy victories. Meanwhile, he's scoring big points, huge points, with his supporters for delivering what he promised. So where does that leave the opposition? Even as we read the political landscape in Trump world, are we any clearer about the state of play? We have this question must be answered, I think. We have indications. Here's an interesting one. Of all people today, Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State, said that she will sign up as a Muslim to protest the intended program to have a Muslim registry under Trump's rules. She is going to sign up to be a Muslim. It's like, this tells you how crazy we are. This is the same woman who said it was worth it to bomb to smithereens all these children, more than half a billion children. And she said it was worth it when she was Secretary of State. It was worth it to kill Muslim children. But now, for political correctness, she will sign up as her own personal protest. If there is to be a Muslim registry, her conscience will drive her to sign up as Muslim. You know, so people are going crazy all over the administration, in it and around it. People are going crazy. This, of course, is not surprising. You'll see all these kinds of things happening. And we would probably be tempted to get involved or to pay attention to these things, these sideshows. But really, I come back to my central point, which began the minute Trump decided to declare his candidacy, Trump and Hillary Clinton, to encourage us not to get sidetracked by these events, but to stay fixed on the question of what are we doing for our survival, collectively and individually. because these kinds of crazy things that are happening, and they will continue to happen under Donald Trump, who I believe is psychologically unstable. I've said that from the beginning. There's something wrong with this guy. And simply because, well, he's been brilliant at business, obviously. He's done a very good job. He's made a lot of money, and he's grown his business exponentially. But his method of thinking is quite erratic, quite unrealistic in some ways, almost fantastical, you know. And no one has been able, it seems, to help him direct his energy in the right way. Even for his business, I guess it worked for his business, but this is a whole different ballgame. And he seems to think that the impunity that he enjoyed as pretty much the chief honcho and sole proprietor of this major business that he had, several businesses, he seems to think that there's no difference in running a country this way. You want something done, you could get it done. And whether it makes sense or not, it's unimportant. Because he's so brilliant, because he's so exceptional, there is no reason to even figure in or factor in anybody else's point of view. He can think for everyone and what he thinks is the best thing to do and the right thing to do because he says it. We are in trouble because I don't know if you recall a program I did called My Cab Ride from Hell. It was a really crazy cab ride that I had in the middle of the night, early morning, as a matter of fact, trying to get home. And the driver just could not see. And it was raining heavily. And in the end, I just had to, because I really felt that we were going to have a very, very bad accident. And I decided I just could not go one more mile with this cab driver. And I decided I would drive myself home, which I did. I was stunned that I did that. But it was clear to me it was the right thing to do. It was the necessary thing to do because we would both be dead the way he was driving. And it was because, really, he couldn't see where he was going and the rain was just ferocious. So I decided to drive myself home. And it applies in this situation that we find ourselves in with a president whose, I would say, erratic behavior, which will continue, by the way. This is not something that just happened, you know, the last couple of weeks. This is his way of operating. And I suppose in his business life, he's used to not being challenged or questioned about anything. And this is, as you look across history, you see this as being a fundamental characteristic of fascists. This is what they do. People who impose the law, people who have an attitude that there is me, and then there are the rest of the minions who really don't matter. I will do the thinking, you will implement my thinking. And then everything would be just fine. Just let me have my way because, of course, I'm brilliant. I'm the most brilliant person on the planet. There's nobody as brilliant as I am. Which tells you that, you know, there's something wrong with the psychology and the thinking of a person who operates at that level. And we will get more of it. And we're also getting indications from people who are similarly alarmed, but they wouldn't say, they can't bring themselves to saying, the president needs psychiatric care. The president has some deep-seated psychological problems. But they're expressing it in these different ways. When the scientists decided to move up the clock to doomsday, this is not a joke. They're saying, they're screaming out loud, that there's something deeply wrong here with the thinking and the method of thinking, the method of acting with our head of state. So I'm saying it. I think there's something deeply wrong here, something highly irregular about Donald Trump. I've said it before. And everybody's falling in line, it seems, except for patches of resistance here and there. But they've already accepted, we've already accepted that this is our president, whether we like him or don't like him. This is our president, and this is how he's going to do his thing. And we are just bystanders. We're looking at this insanity unfold. You're going to build a wall. And you will have the Mexicans pay for it. I mean, Jesus. And, you know, we see the mass exodus of people from the State Department. They're not saying it out loud, but they're saying it. This guy's crazy. And there could only be a crazy outcome. Now, the fascinating thing about people of this ilk is that they appear to be perfectly normal. In fact, they appear to be geniuses. So you give them a lot of latitude. Look at the Democratic Party and its response so far, the most vapid response we've ever seen. They've approved every single one so far of his nominees. They've cleared them. They've approved of them. No objections. Chuck Schumer, who is the leader now of the Democratic Party, has nothing to say. And supposedly they are the opposition. We talked here, I played you the so-called testimony of John Lewis, the so-called icon of the civil rights movement, and Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, where they're supposed to be fighting against the nomination of, what is his name? I'm blocking on his name. Perhaps that's the reason for attorney general. It's amazing. And we say, is this the best we have? Is this the best ammunition that we've got? Jeff Sessions. Is this the best ammunition we have? One is blathering about the civil rights movement of 50 years ago or 60 years ago. And the other spends about half of his time talking about himself. You're in the middle of what is supposed to be a fight. It's amazing. So the same criticisms that I've had before Trump, this is during Obama's years, still apply. We don't have very much in the way of opposition. People, you know, who are part of the bureaucracy in some measure or the other are choosing to oppose Donald Trump by just walking away, resigning, quitting, whatever. That's a good sign. And I understand what they're doing because they can't come out and just blast him. They are taking measures nonetheless to express their grave concerns about how this country is going to be run and what the signals are out there. But Trump isn't doing anything that he didn't give us an indication of during the campaign. He isn't doing anything different. Which makes the question of opposition even greater. This is not something that just smacked us in the face. He said this was what he was going to do. And he is following through literally. He's following literally the course of action that he outlined during the election. And here we are. Well, that was at least a year and perhaps a year and a half down the road. And he's still prevailing. It's an amazing thing to watch. All of these Democrats, all of these pro-Hillary Democrats, can't figure out how to mount a counteroffensive against Donald Trump. They have said nothing. Except, okay, you want this person? Yeah, we okay with that person. We have no problem confirming the people that are going to be running the government. And we know, we've discussed here, the problems that they bring with them in terms of the way they interpret the world. In this day and age, all of Trump's cabinet people, all but two are white men. Almost all of them have serious money. And we are pretending that we will get a pretty democratic government out of this batch of people who will soon be running the country, who will soon be cabinet-level members. We're pretending that a democratic process is occurring here. And we have a democracy. Well, that's crazy. You know, you wonder, has something happened to us? Are we numb? Are we just overwhelmed with the reality that we are living? Just to give you an idea of where things are going, The Economist Intelligence Unit's 9th Annual Democracy Index just was it yesterday? Removed, put the United States down one peg in terms of democracy. It is now to be considered a flawed democracy and dropped from number 20. From number 19 to number 20 on the world stage, despite all the stuff that is being talked about in the name of democracy here, the people who rate democracies all over the world yesterday announced that the United States is not any longer a full democracy. They downgraded the United States to a flawed democracy after rating democracies all over the world for 2016. So people are understanding that there's a dramatic change occurring here. And we are seeing it, we are experiencing it in real time. I talked yesterday about Charlie Rangel, one of the stalwarts of Congress, one of the most powerful members of Congress, doing the same thing, convicted of 11 of the 13 charges lodged against him about basically underhanded criminal stuff being taken out. And we see that as a kind of, in a way, a logical end to the way he was running things in Harlem. Corrupt. And look at the damage. For 40 years, look at how much currency, political currency, was invested in him. And look what we got. So, and by the way, he was repeatedly elected, of course, to Congress. He's been there for 40 years. And then you say to anybody who would listen, I've been asking the question, how is it that out of Harlem you have such incredible amounts of political power? And how does that explain the condition that Harlem is in today? Totally unprotected politically. Yet you have all these people. We had a Secretary of State coming out of Harlem, Basil Patterson, who also was a deputy mayor. You have H. Carl McCall, the comptroller for the state, coming out of Harlem. You had a mayor coming out of Harlem, David Dinkins, who was a state senator. Right? Coming out of Harlem. You have all this political power amassed and concentrated in Harlem, Black Harlem, Adam Clayton Powell's Harlem, and look at the state it's in. Practically no opposition. People just letting these things fly. So we have I have to wonder whether it is that we are just numb. We just in a space where we don't see it is so futile to even mount an offensive, and we're so discouraged. We don't have the energy to take on a fight, even if that fight is for our individual and collective survival. Or whether the system is so successful at beating us down, we dare not even contemplate taking on the fight. We have fascism. He has not been in office for a week. It's already planted. He has already let us know. Democracy will not be tolerated here. this is my corporation. This is my new business, and this is how it's going to be. I have no experience politically, but I know how to run a business, and truthfully, the U.S. is just a big business. A bit bigger than the businesses that I have right now, but I am able to run it as a business. We do not need your input. We don't necessarily need your approval. This is the way it's going to be. So if people are thinking still that, well, we just have to wait it out for 4 years at the most. I mean, that's the most damaging effect right now of Trump's presidency. We just have to develop a bit of patience and kind of suffer through the next 4 years. But I'm looking at the fact that we are totally open. We are totally open for attack, and we have very little to point to as lines of defense. We have, I would say, close to no defense, no opposition where it counts. So what do you think? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. David from San Francisco, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Teresa. Hadn't spoken in a number of months. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you.
You know, I've looked at Donald Trump from the angle of organized crime as opposed to a political figure. And as a matter of fact, it's kind of easy to also look at Hitler in the same vein, that he was organized crime. He had two different gangs. He had the brown shirts and the black shirts. And if you're a researcher of Nazi Hitler or Hitler era, there was what was called the Night of the Long Knives, where the black shirts killed the brown shirts and became the Gestapo. And so the idea that that's pending and some of these people are going to kill each other before they all fall apart is one angle to look at. But it's kind of emerging people to strategize opposition to Trump in the angle of opposing organized crime. And, for example, if you look at these executive orders that he's putting together, whether it's the abortion one or this new one about the fences, he's basically creating an income stream for organized crime. For example, if you looked at building the fence, one of the things that organized crime used to do was get you phony papers, you know, a phony passport, go to organized crime. If you want some smuggling done, go to organized crime. If Donald Trump is going to manage Homeland Security, at the same time he's going to be tied to organized crime, you're going to have to pay a bribe to Trump's cronies in order to get any smuggling done. And if you're wanting to get some undocumented workers across the border with the coyotes, you're going to have to pay tribute to Trump. If you want to even get into the issue of the cost of this stupid fence, when Bush was in office, it was running at the rate of $1 million a foot. And I think they've brought it down under the Obama administration. They brought it down to something like $300 million per mile. But it's still, you know, when you start thinking of a fence at $300 million a mile, that's still pretty pricey. And but the idea that abortion is another example. There's an old Kitty Kelly book about Frank Sinatra, and in it, apparently Frank Sinatra's mother was an abortionist in New Jersey, and she was very wealthy, and not only did she provide abortions, but she would blackmail people. And so the idea that those are two facets of organized crime, extortion and abortion. And apparently...
Well, you know, I would say this. One of the The only major politician, I would say, so far that I am aware of who has openly opposed Trump is your governor, Jerry Brown.
Oh, sure.
He says, I am going to defend every immigrant no matter what, and I am not going to go along with Trump's program. He was quite specific and explicit about that. So, but he is the only one so far, and he said this in the State of the State message, he was the only one so far that I know of who has openly stated an intention to oppose Donald Trump and the way he proposes to govern.
Sure. Well, I'm sure there are other politicians who have done it in a more regional sort of way as opposed to statewide. And in fact, there's even talk, we do have sanctuary cities out here. Los Angeles and San Francisco are sanctuary cities, but we're actually talking about sanctuary statehood. You know, doing it statewide, because this whole California has been smart enough, and I maybe even lucky enough, but I'll say smart enough to oppose organized crime in a whole, you know, for decades. There's actually kind of an interesting book about the old Black Dahlia murder. This was a famous murder back in the 1940s, I think, back in Los Angeles. And part of the issue back then was that the person that's accused of committing that murder was the coroner of Los Angeles. And he was providing abortions to people, and then he would blackmail them. And then on the side, he kind of had a sickness about murdering women. And apparently he had murdered, it was a sort of a, he was astute enough to leave the bodies in just in different jurisdictions. So they would be in sheriff's jurisdictions or police jurisdictions or county jurisdictions. And so people didn't realize that there was a mass murderer out there, and that it was only almost decades later that they realized these cross jurisdictions. But the idea of organized crime being run out of California Bugsy Siegel and some of the famous people who had to basically flee to Las Vegas. But there are ways of opposing organized crime, and that's why I'm saying it's smarter to look at Trump as organized crime and then oppose him in those techniques as opposed to politics.
We'll see what people think of your proposal, but I thank you for getting us started today and for contributing so meaningfully today. Thank you. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Therese. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Oh, glad. Before I comment on this mortifying situation we're in, have you read the book Psi Healing by Alfred Stalter?
No.
It's PSI Healing. Gene Achtenberg. Imagery.
All right, but we're running kind of low on time, which, of course, we will make up for tomorrow. But I want you to get to your point right away.
It's definitely fascism. It's been fascism. Like Obama been president. How has he helped black people? He hasn't. And is Trump, he's taken the agenda to where they want it to go. That's why they picked him over Hillary. To me, it has nothing to do with the votes.
Because he is more amenable to a fascistic way of operating than Hillary might have been?
Well, she was a fascist too, but...
You're not exempting anybody.
I'm sure there might be somebody, but not those two.
Thank you very much, David, for calling in today. Okay. South Carolina, Khalil, you're on the air.
Hi, Latrice.
Hello.
Hi. You're sounding very strong today. That's great.
Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you're speaking the truth. A lot of people have been saying it, but it's almost like that story with the Emperor Wears No Clothes. where everyone sees the obvious and people are scared. But, I mean, I don't know if you remember. I've been saying the same thing. You know, the guy's a mentally ill fascist. You know, anybody from New York has known that. He's always, he was like a clown. You know? So what's interesting is that the Women's March protest demonstration, okay, on Saturday, that really invigorated me, because that should send a message to everybody. We have to really do some coalition building and just say no, okay, because he's not mentally fit, and it's frightfully obvious, okay. And some people are even bandying about the idea he has third stage syphilis, maybe. Because we don't know anything. He's not had a real medical examination. So I think somehow we need to compel the government, the Congress, to make him have an exam with an independent doctor and his doctor. Because if you have third stage syphilis, what happens is that there are lesions in certain areas of your brain.
This syphilis thing has been bandied around without any proof. It's just a thought.
Okay, I understand that. But, all right, from what we know of this character, he says what he means, and he really engages in a lot of projection. In other words, he's a thief, and he'll call somebody else. You know, he'll say, well, you're stealing, but he's the thief. Remember, he said he got through, he didn't go to Vietnam, but he got through the war basically because he was having a whole lot of unprotected sex and he didn't get VD. What he's really saying is he probably did get VD. But, you know, that's why he needs to have an exam.
Well, there's nothing that will compel him to have an exam. I mean, no president has been compelled to have a physical exam or even a psychiatric exam. But I think we're seeing here an interesting personality type. And that is a person with some serious deficits. Mm-hmm. He's been able to cover it up because he's a wealthy person and he can hire people to, just like he has with this cabinet that he would put in place, he would, you know, put them on task and then, you know, be the guy who runs them. But we know that Donald Trump individually, as a person, cannot run the country. He just does not have the breadth of experience and expertise to do that. And it's the same with his businesses. I think he knows what he wants to accomplish, but we are clear that there's a battalion of people who get to do the actual work of growing his business. So I'm not under any illusions about that. The question, though, is, as you talk about this, what, in your view, is the state of the opposition right now, especially in Congress?
Well, this is a huge problem because, all right, idealistically, I don't really approve of obstructionism, even though they did it. They engaged in that for 8 years, you know, and infrastructure building is great, but they act like it's a new idea. And the former president was trying to do that for a very long time. But, right, see, that's all we have now is Congress. They have to, we don't even have Congress, but people have to stand up and just say, no, this is totally inappropriate. I know it doesn't follow the rules, but at some point we have to say no, because what really happened is the Electoral College dropped the ball. Because when you read the Constitution, it almost describes Donald Trump to a T why he shouldn't be president.
Okay. Well, I mean, the law was followed. The person who wins the most electors from the various congressional districts, that's who wins.
Right.
I mean,
the laws
have been constructed in such a way that you really can't say that Donald Trump broke any of these laws. The laws have been constructed in a very strange way that allow these, you know, loopholes and ways in which people could make arguments that are still within the laws and that allow them to prevail. So it's not that he did anything wrong or anything illegal. It is the way the law works, the way election law works.
Right. But really what I'm talking about is the second part of the stipulations of what the Electoral College is obligated to do. And that encompasses if the candidate, they can say no, even if he wins the votes, if the candidate has shown where he is engaging in collaboration with foreign entities or has been operating, you know, really not in the interest of the country. I don't know it verbatim, but when you read that, it's the second part to it, and it's exactly what Donald Trump was doing with the Russians. You know, just remember, see that those videos of this golden shower nonsense that was released. See, when people are blackmailing you, that's just the tip of the iceberg. They're just letting him know that he better stay in line. At least that's my opinion, obviously. But
okay, well, I thank you for it. And thanks for calling in and contributing. You always give us some other stuff to think about. Thank you. Ray from Florida, you on the air.
Hello, Utrecht. Happy New Year.
Thank you, and to you too.
Thanks. I think we have to give three cheers and pray for the protection of Representative Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii, because she has shown really outstanding courage in pointing out the U.S. involvement in backing terror and destabilization in the Middle East. And I don't even know, frankly, if Alan Grayson, you know, retained his seat in Congress after he ran for the Senate and lost. I'm not up on that. And I once had high hopes for Representative Donna Edwards in Maryland, who also ran for the Senate and lost, and I'm not sure if she kept her Congress seat. But she showed real backbone when she was first elected, but kind of isn't making, you know, national news these days. So that's not a lot out of, what, 550 so-called representatives in Washington. But I think Gabbard really deserves very honorable mention and support. And I hope, you know, I hope what she's got spreads to other people.
Well, the thing is, we could identify some people who are brave enough to take these kinds of positions. But the Democratic Party as a whole is shot.
Oh, yeah, completely. Yep.
And you need them, if for them to be effective in any way as an oppositional force, they have to be united. And they have to be, you know, out there with some kinds of criticism. But we're not hearing anything.
No, and I mean, I've spent so many phone calls with you, you know, standing up for Jill Stein before she soiled herself with that ridiculous recount, and I can't say that I can ever, you know, trust her word on anything again, because I don't think that she was really divulging, you know, what was driving her in that respect. And the Greens, I only know of Ajamu Baraka and what's his name at CPR News? Don DeBar. Those are the only two people I know of that are voting members of the Green Committee or Green Leadership, and they haven't really made any public statements that I know of that have, you know, distanced themselves from that recount. So no, I'm not seeing a whole lot of united effort. Sorry to say.
Well, we talked about that so much time has passed now, and we have heard no report from the Green Party about, you know, how the election went for the party, where they think they, you know, ran aground and where they thought they scored some victories. We have heard nothing, nor have we heard what they intend to do. What is the future plan for the Green Party? So this was, to me, very evident, a very evident flaw. And it should have been the case right by now that the Green Party should have accounted for its performance in the 2016 election. It's disappointing, but this happens.
Well, prior to the election, I found a great website that took all the polls in the country and aggregated and put them like on a spreadsheet where you could read how candidates were polling in various districts. And the funny thing is that in the greater Detroit area, Jill Stein was polling at 5% prior, according to this website. Now, you would think that if that 5% was the highest she pulled anywhere in the country, except maybe Hawaii. And you would think that if she was going to, you know, make an allegation that the vote count was wrong, she would have gone to specifically mention the place where she had these 5% polls. And yet during the recount, to my knowledge, she never mentioned that. So how weird is that?
It's kind of weird. But then again, it begs an answer, which we still don't have. We still don't have an answer.
Well,
we've come to the end of the program, Ray. But the good news is we continue this discussion tomorrow because we have to look at what is happening, and it's not looking good. We have to talk about these things. It's early, but it's also late, depending on where you are. It's early in the game for Donald Trump. For us, it's getting kind of late, and we should have our act together a bit better than it is right now, and we should be demanding from those who we have elected to take a position of some sort that would represent a larger community, because this is a problem. We're staring at it. We are not acknowledging it. But we are seeing the signs that there are people who understand it, but they won't say anything. So two questions we have to ask. What's going on with what else is coming down the pike? And in any event, no matter what comes down the pike, where are we in the scheme of things, especially as it relates to an oppositional force of any type? Is there one? Are we part of one? Are we thinking of being one? Are we thinking of pressing buttons of those people we have elected to office and making them respond accordingly? What are we doing here? So we continue this discussion tomorrow. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. And I want to also apprise you of two numbers to keep in mind to listen to the program live, because many of you are on the go, but you can still catch us live at 712-775-6850. That's 712-775-6850. And you can listen to the last five shows of Lead Stories if you call 701-719-9977. Again, 701-719-9977. Pass the information around to people you know, and let's grow this audience, and let's grow PRN as a whole. Thanks for listening. We'll see each other tomorrow, which is Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye. Thank you.